South Asia will remain a critical area of U.S. national security for many years to come, and we need to learn from our successes and our mistakes. This text also outlines a new world of risk and the role of intelligence collection and covert action in this environment. This includes an exploration of strategic principles and of the complex dynamic between intelligence and policy. The book reviews the nexus of conflict, intelligence, government, and society. I hope to cast some light on the art of intelligence by relating some lessons learned over the course of my career, reinforced by the experiences and views of others. This book is my attempt to describe the value of intelligence and how it can protect liberal institutions and advance our increasingly networked, interdependent, global society. It is also about the value of intelligence officers to our nation. The book's title is a tribute to the late CIA Director Alan Dulles, who in 1961 wrote The Craft of Intelligence, and to the 5th century BC Chinese strategist Sun Tzu and his The Art of War. In the first sentence of his book, Dulles references Sun Tzu. I owe a debt of gratitude to many others who have guided me as well. After all, intelligence is not exactly new. Sun Tzu emphasized that the art of war is necessary for the state. He added that all warfare is based on deception, and that if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. He was referring to the value of intelligence. What was true in ancient China holds true today. Increasingly, war and intelligence are vital not only to the state, but also to non-state actors and citizens, because we are entering a new era of conflict with its own unique characteristics and requirements. Because of this epochal shift, the world of intelligence is in great flux. Pulled in many directions by new forces of conflict and cooperation, contorted by shifting political interests, our intelligence community struggles to function effectively. This syndrome is particularly acute in the United States, where society holds variant expectations and ambivalent views about the role of intelligence. Respect, romanticism, knowledge, ignorance, suspicion, fear, and loathing are jumbled together in our national psyche when we think about spies. Or, as National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice told a congressional hearing, we have an allergy to intelligence. As a nation, we struggle to understand and to support intelligence agencies and intelligence professionals. As the nature of war continues to shift, the role of intelligence will grow. All citizens, not just government officials, need a better grasp of intelligence, both its capabilities and its limits. Better intelligence can protect and advance the interests of the United States and our allies and help promote liberal democracy worldwide. That is why I served my country and why I still honor my oath to the Constitution. That is also why I am writing this book. I hope to pass some of what I have learned to you. Chapter 1. Dreaming. If you can imagine it, you can achieve it. If you can dream it, you can become it. William Arthur Ward. As a young boy, I dreamed of becoming a spy. Somehow, around age 10 or 11, I found a CIA office address and wrote a handwritten letter, probably on ruled notebook paper, explaining my desire to serve. In a couple of weeks, the CIA answered. Arriving home from another routine day at school, I discovered the sealed envelope waiting for me on my desk in my bedroom. My mother had placed it there. I carefully extracted the single-page letter. It was typewritten on official CIA stationery with a logo of an eagle's head over a multi-starred compass. The kind-hearted respondent politely thanked me for my interest and encouraged me to reapply at a later age. I recall holding the letter and thinking, "How cool is this? The CIA does exist. Maybe one day they will want me. More than 40 years later, I no longer have the letter, but I cherish that memory and many more after my years in the CIA's clandestine service. It was more than a job or a career. It was the fulfillment of determined hope. I loved every day in the CIA, even the hard and ugly ones. My service afforded me an opportunity to contribute in ways that exceeded even my romantic boyhood notions. In late November 2001, as Afghan and U.S. forces routed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, General Tommy Franks and I had finished another good meeting. With him, all the meetings were good. In a private moment, walking in the cool night on the concrete tarmac of a U.S. military airfield, General Franks placed his large hand on my shoulder and exulted in his loud, cigarette-seared Texas voice, "Hank, I know what you're doing. You're living the dream." "General, you got that right," I replied. I wondered if he knew how right he was. Did he have the same kind of romantic thoughts as a boy? He must have, I figured, or at least something close. He intuitively understood what I had dreamed so long ago. I looked at General Franks in a different light after that brief exchange. He was much more than hard bone, gristle, and a stream of profanity. Later that night, in the crucible of 2001, I pondered the moment and reflected on my CIA duty. The sense of adventure, esprit de corps, and service surpassed whatever I had imagined decades earlier. But the challenges were also harder. I had never dreamed about the sorrow and bitter anger of a 9/11 catastrophe, or of losing men, foreign agents, and CIA officers who were under my command. We were in the middle of a war, and I was in charge of the CIA campaign in Afghanistan. We had deployed the first teams into Afghanistan only days after 9/11. We had almost 100 officers scattered in every corner of the country, working with Afghan tribal militia, collecting intelligence, and engaging in subversion, sabotage, and combat. Some of our men, teamed with U.S. Army Special Forces, were riding into battle on horseback. Others were operating armed Predator drones in the sky above. We were avenging a horrible attack on our homeland. We were protecting our nation. The President of the United States often sought our guidance. We were killing the enemy by the thousands. Serving my country in times of great need and combating an evil foe, that is what I had dreamed and desperately wanted for so long. Armed conflict in other wars in other centuries was the object of my boyhood passion. My mother, a teacher who encouraged me to explore, often took me to the Warren County, Georgia library. On the ground floor of a crumbling 3-story stone edifice that was once the county school, the small library was shrouded in dim solitude. The high shelves, jammed with worn books, blocked most of the light that struggled to penetrate the dingy windows. A mix of dust and mildew clung to the books, some not having been opened in years. It was a quiet sanctuary of hidden knowledge. I loved the place. There was a small shelf filled with biographies of American heroes. George Washington, Nathaniel Greene, and Francis Marion, a.k.a. the Swamp Fox, were some of my favorites. The battles they fought against the British Empire were often unconventional and required special knowledge and insight, along with superior human capital, especially leadership. Here I learned that without intelligence and covert action, these American warrior leaders would all have failed. George Washington was by any measure an exceptional spymaster who placed great emphasis on the craft of intelligence and the value of its product. He employed all aspects of intelligence: collection, analysis, counterintelligence, denial, deception, and propaganda. Even portly, scholarly Benjamin Franklin, I learned, was an accomplished intelligence operative, running agent networks in Europe. Frances Marion captured my imagination perhaps more than any other. I marveled at his stealthy, fast, precise, and brazen guerrilla attacks on the British throughout the South Carolina lowlands. He not only understood the enemy, he knew the environment, both the physical and human terrain. He was one of America's first champions of irregular warfare. Even now, whenever I drive over the bridge crossing the PD River in South Carolina, I think about the Swamp Fox's bold operations. As a rowdy youngster enthralled with the romance of warrior deeds in the fields and woods behind our home, I refought the battles of America's wars. I dug trench lines and bunkers. I assaulted trees and bushes. I tracked imaginary foes. I would run through the woods, shooting, slashing, and screaming at enemies. The few neighbors that we had must have thought me insane. And I read Edgar Rice Burroughs's Tarzan,